You are listening to Blast Processing, the official podcast of all things video gaming, gadget, and gear related on DVDVerdict.com. On this episode, Steve goes into the Hammerhead, Kevin turns the world on its ear, and John, Yabba-dubaba. Episode 22, No, You Wait in the Car.
Hello, you're listening to Blast Processing, the official, unofficially official podcast of all things gadget, gear, and video game related.
Officially.
Officially on DVDVerdict.com. How was that?
You stole my bit!
you were doing it! How did it sound, though? Was that okay?
Sure.
Yeah? I thought it sounded pretty good. Maybe I could do this for a living.
Maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Although CBC's making a lot of cuts.
That's what I'm told. Poor old Republic of Dials in trouble.
Yep.
Not really, though.
No. Well, you never know.
Meh.
Whatever.
We're talking about Canadian television. That's twice in 1 week.
Really?
Dear God.
Yeah, guys, that's, North of 60's been on the air for like 100 years.
So. Is North of 60 still on the air?
No. Well, they got Arctic Air now, which is basically, I guess, North of 60, except about
airplanes. They just stuck a new title sequence on old episodes of North of 60.
No wonder Arctic Air is not being canceled.
You know what? I think the world is due for a gritty 21st century remake of Danger Bay.
I knew that was coming.
Oh, that would be
good. I knew that was coming, and I don't disagree. Fuck the Beachcombers. You want boats?
Gritty 21st century remake of The Littlest Hobo.
That'd be pretty wicked.
It'd be awesome because the hobo would actually have run away from Da Vinci when Da Vinci became the mayor of
Vancouver. Da Vinci's Inquest is all about tracking down The Littlest Hobo. Where the hell is that dog?
That'd be pretty cool.
He stumbles on the murder scenes, probably the criminals that the hobo is leaving in his wake. Because in the gritty remake of The Littlest Hobo, he's not fucking around with those criminals.
No, he rips throats.
Can we fit Cats and Dog in there?
That's not a Canadian show.
That wasn't Canadian?
No, that was an NBC show.
Oh, was it really? Yeah. I always thought it was Canadian.
Yeah, no, the one with Yancey Butler and the robot.
No,
or she
no.
was the robot, wasn't she?
No. Cats and Dog was a cop named Officer William Katz or whatever, and he had
a dog.
It was a Canadian show, and in the States they changed the names so they could say it was a 80s reboot of Rin Tin Tin.
So what was the one I'm thinking of that had Yancey Butler in it, and she was like a cyborg cop or some shit? That was like Cat and Dog or something, too.
Oh, Ricky, that shit.
I don't know, man. But anyway,
when I look up Yancey Butler, I'm going to get like an ad for... buying bulk cocaine.
This is Blast Processing, your video game podcast, where we talk about video games.
I thought we were a Canadian TV podcast. You lied to me!
I'm Kevin Woolridge, your host number 3. Joining with me, as always, this is Steve Power. And Mr. John Mercer.
Maybe tomorrow... I'm gonna settle down. Till tomorrow, I'll just keep moving on.
Sudoo-boo. Good dog.
Very nice. So, what have we been playing this week, gentlemen? I'm not sure any of that is being picked up by the microphone.
It probably is.
Okay, all right.
It's probably just a little quiet.
We'll do some post.
Yeah.
Post.
Sure, we will.
You'll say you will, and then you won't.
You'll get me up on the soundstage to do that again.
Who's going first? I'm not.
John, you want to kick it off?
Not it.
Oh, when did we start doing that? Hey, Kevin.
What? Oh, don't do that.
Megaforce. Swish.
I'm going to start. Screw you guys.
Okay, Kevin.
I've already taken over this podcast.
That TV show was called Man and Machine, by the way.
Oh.
Okay, where did I get Cat and Dog to?
You were probably thinking of the Canadian show and mixing it up with the...
Yeah, you started thinking, man, that Canadian show, Cats and Dog, really suck. You know what would make that awesome? A robot.
A robot played by an alcoholic crazy person. who was also hot as rocks. Anyway, yeah, Kev, what have you been playing? You take the lead.
I haven't been playing anything because I've been working all week, and it's been a very, very intense week.
Wait, you work?
Well, I worked this week. I did get a chance, of course. You guys saw about a half hour ago, try out some Fez, which was awesome. Yeah. I really liked it.
Explain the concept behind Fez to me.
Fez is a 2D platformer. Kind of borrows its style from Cave Story. Kind of retro, kind of, you know. Except a little prettier, I think.
Shinier.
A little shinier.
Yep. Shinier.
And you're a 2D kind of sprite-type character who wears a little cute little Fez hat. Thanks. And you can rotate the world in four ways. As you know, every time you rotate it, it becomes two-dimensional again. Which I think is a really, really cool concept.
Like, I really like how platforms that are too far to jump to, you'll rotate the world and might take one spin, might take two spins. You're eventually lining things up to make it traversable.
Yeah. So I with those kind of games, like, I mean, there's been a bunch of these kind of mind-bendish type games. There was that one where you were like a paper type creature character. It was a PC indie game.
That's why I wouldn't have heard of it.
Anyway, I can't remember what it was called. And then you've got, of course, the Echochrome games. You know, all these kind of mind-bending games. Sometimes I get really frustrated with them because I'm like,
Not enough thought went into this concept. They got a concept, they don't have the level programming skills to really...
Yeah, exactly. So, as a result, like, I used to get kind of a little bit frustrated with them and being like, oh, this is too mind-bendy. You know, there has to be some sort of level ground, right? Or even keel. What kind of analogy am I looking for here? It doesn't matter. Keels
were
and
you
ground.
Going, were you going land-based or nautical with that one?
Airship.
Kev is the Navy SEAL of analogies. He can go land, sea, and air.
Skilled seas do not make skillful sailors.
Ah, there you go. That's true. But I think Fez, they've got some skillful sailors there.
Yeah,
it seems to work really well.
Well, considering it's only been percolating for, what, 4 years now?
Yeah, that was a PC game for, like, ages ago, right? Yeah. First. And we played it on Xbox Live.
Yeah. And I was really, really impressed with the graphical style, because, I mean, that's something that could have been a bit of a train wreck.
Yeah.
But it kind of looks like you take something like Cave Story, but if it had been made by the guys who made Wind Waker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I just saw the graphics for the little main character with the little thing, and all I could think of was Nyakat. So I just kind of...
You didn't like the little Fez he's got, man?
See, I'm not a Shriner.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, let me tell you about what the
Fez
Shriner...
Fez remind me of
Indy. I don't drive around in a really, really big Oldsmobile convertible.
Yeah, but think about Fez in regards to Indiana Jones.
You'll never be in the Santa Claus Parade with the Keystone Cops car.
No.
Instead, imagine a guy in a Fez hat with a scimitar. Maybe you'll like Fez hats better then.
Yeah, could he have sunglasses?
Yeah, sure. And a mustache.
And a big mustache.
Yeah.
Is he shirtless?
He could be.
Does he have, like, big baggy pants and one of those vests with no sleeves?
He's described the president of Turkey.
Or Aladdin.
But he's got a fez and a scimitar.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool.
Aladdin, he was played by Omar Sharif in the 70s.
Oh, does he look like Sinbad?
Depends on the version, I guess.
Monk Sinbad. You remember Sinbad.
You're talking about the 80s comedian Sinbad, or like
90s motherfucker, early 90s.
Didn't he have his own TV show as well?
He probably did.
This is not a TV podcast, so I just want to remind our listeners.
So you guys were playing Sinbad the Game on Xbox Live.
Well,
who's bad?
Sinbad. That's terrible, dude.
Oh.
Who's next? That's all I played this week, man.
Yeah,
I did. This is very exciting for me.
Okay.
Because I've been doing a house purge, right? Yep. Throwing out stuff.
Yep.
And I had a little pile of stuff that was my maybe pile, right? Maybe I'll get rid of, maybe I'll keep. There was only one thing in it, and it was my PS1.
And I said, hey, give it to me. And yep. Which time you said, fuck it, I'll keep it.
That's exactly what happened. Steve came over, he said, oh man, if you're going to get rid of it, give it to me. And then I was thinking, man, Steve wants to keep it. Wants it. Maybe Maybe I should keep it.
Just because, Steve.
Yeah, there's value. You made me see the value in it. This is the thing, right?
I'm glad I could provide you with
that. Vintage Burns.
Yeah.
Son, you just got wooled.
Because you reminded me, and I'm not encouraging anybody out there to do this, because technically it is illegal.
No, it's not.
No, it's not?
No.
Oh.
Not in Canada, man.
Well, shit, son. Get out there and mod your PS1.
Modding is perfectly legal. It's the whole practice of burning games.
Oh, okay. Illegal. Okay, well, so my PS1 was modded.
The old Reeferino?
I gotta tell
this. What, a puff of the old Reeferinos while we play a burned-off copy of Tony Hawk Pro Skater on modified PlayStation
totally,
1?
Man. I gotta tell this story. So, I was going to MUN, and I got my student loan. It was my first year. First thing I did with my loan, I went out to buy PlayStation 1.
Dude, they didn't have PlayStations back in 1986.
Yes, son of a bitch. And before I even got it home, Steve picked me up, and we went to some guy's house. I wasn't even allowed to go in. I had to sit in the car, because it was like a, you know...
Hush-hush
clandestine deal.
Off the record, on the QT.
That's right. He went in with the PlayStation to mod it before... It even saw regular game.
He cracked the seal to mod it, didn't he?
Oh,
cracked
yeah.
The seal on the box?
Yep. So it was deadly. So anyway, I decided to keep it, hooked it up to my TV. That night, it was that night, I burned off an NES emulator with all the NES games on it. And it works. I just don't have a controller. But I can't wait to play some retro NES on it, man.
I can't believe we just totally admitted to breaking law on the internet.
You said it wasn't illegal.
The practice of modding your PlayStation is not illegal. The practice of having an entire library of NES games on one TV.
I'm sure there's not going to be any Nintendo representative listening to this.
We don't have a fan base, son? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm just saying.
Reggie and me are tight.
Next week when I get my job at Nintendo... The NOA guys are going to be like, yeah, that podcast has got to go.
Considering the Nintendo bashing that have happened already on this podcast, if there were any listeners out there, they're no longer listening.
This is true.
So we're safe.
Yeah, we're okay.
So that's all I got to say about that.
I had a light week.
Yeah.
I had a light week. And John said he's got some stuff to talk about, so I'll go next so that John can have some time to expound upon what he wants to talk about.
Okay.
I did try... two demos for games which are now currently available. They're new releases, so I guess it's kind of, you know, valid and concurrent and stuff.
Why is there a head for you, boy, sir?
Get off me. I did try... Shut up, Kev. Birds of Steel.
I said shut up, damn it!
Birds of Steel. They could have come up with a better name than that, man.
Wings of Steel would have been a much more...
Definitely.
You know, Propellers of Steel, Wool of Steel, anything would have been better than Birds of Steel,
man. Birds.
It's a World War II era flight sim. It's the same company that did Sturmovik, which was actually a pretty awesome flight sim. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It played pretty well. I mean, it's very slowly paced. It's very sim heavy. It's, you know, it's one of those armchair pilot kind of games.
Are you in cockpit?
You can be.
Are you in the cockpit in Birds of Steel?
You ever been in the cockpit before, Billy? Do you like gladiator movies? You ever seen a grown man naked?
So it can be? You can switch out?
You can switch between, yeah, like...
That's cool.
Like a close chase cam view or a cockpit view, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know? But it played pretty well. It was like, you know, it was a solid... As far as flight sims go, you know, it was well put together, competent, looked nice. I liked the landing physics and stuff, even though it took me, like, several tries to figure it out without burying my plane into a runway.
Yeah.
But,
It wasn't no Top Gun.
It wasn't Top Gun. No. No, I didn't feel the need for speed, you know. But, it was pretty cool. There were no volleyball games, no shirtless volleyball or anything like that on it. So, you know, it wasn't Top Gun. But it was,
uninterested.
Yeah. But as far as, like, World War II era flight sims go, I liked Sturmovik, and it feels like Sturmovik with more variety of planes and stuff like that, and a more, like, the campaign is based on realistic,
right.
Like, on actual events and stuff, you know, Battle of Midway and Pearl Harbor and yada, yada, yada.
Is that why you bought those paper airplane guys?
They were free!
Oh, they were free?
They were free. I got those tonight after my meal.
nice.
They were in, like, a little treasure chest at Pizza Delight, and the kids picked them out. And I saw a Mustang and a Spitfire, so I was like, I'm taking those! I took two! That's awesome. Who's going to stop me?
You took them from your children.
No, I took them from the treasure box. My kids picked their own.
He took them from other people's children.
I'm a horrible person. So, yeah, there was that.
Yep.
The other demo was the pseudo-sequel, unofficial follow-up, I guess, to X-Blades, a game called Blades of Time. Which was cool. It was neat. I enjoyed X-Blades for what it was, which was, like, you know, it's one of those games I call a solid six.
Yeah.
But that six comes from the bottom.
Right.
You know, like, right. It was a game that started as a zero or a one and works its way up to a six, rather than, you know, a ten that works its way down to a six.
I don't know anything about X-Blades.
You're some chick with a pigtail or a ponytail, and you got swords and a gun, and you walk through levels hacking people up.
Okay.
You know, it's pretty straightforward.
You're pink, and you got real big eyes.
Okay. she does kind of have a little bit of an anime influence and stuff.
Right, right.
But Blades of Time looked really, really nice. And there were some cool mechanics in there. There were some cool, like, time travel mechanics, where the way it works is, instead of traveling back in time or reversing time, you create past echoes of yourself.
Hmm.
You slow time, and you can be in, like, two places at once. So you could, say, have to stand on a platform to open a door.
I see what you mean.
And when she stands on this platform, you kick in this ability, and her, like, her past echo stays on this platform.
Is there a similar mechanic in Ratchet & Clank? A crack in time.
I have no idea.
Yes, I think there is. Yeah. There is, yeah.
I've never played it, so I can't count.
But okay, it's only in the Clank levels.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so they ripped off a Clank in time.
Yeah.
But either way, you know, like it was pretty cool, and it looked really nice for, right. You know, a middle tier game. It didn't. I mean, no, it didn't look like AAA quality. You know, craziness. But
was there Sabian script?
There was no Sabian script. There was no ship graveyard level. But it was also hard as balls.
Yeah.
It was pretty tough. I died several times.
X-Blades was the same way, man.
I didn't find X-Blades too bad.
Maybe it was just because I fell asleep during the first combat sequence.
while playing it?
No, I didn't find X-Blades too bad, but Blades of Time was a bit tougher. But I also found out that it is retailing for $39.99.
Okay.
And for that price...
Yeah, it's fair bad, price.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Birds of Steel... is also retailing for the same price.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of cool. They're both from Konami. They're both
I'm going to win the Battle of Midway with my penis.
So yeah, there's those. Other than that, I rediscovered my horrible, horrible, crippling addiction to Top Gear.
Yes.
The British car show.
Yes, you have.
And that, in turn... led me back to Forza Motorsport 4.
Right.
Which, you know, the two go hand in hand, like chocolate and peanut butter. I did 14 laps in one sitting of the Top Gear test track in a Kia CED, or C'd, trying to set the lap record for star in a reasonably priced car.
Is there actually a...
There is actually an achievement, star in a reasonably priced car.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
And the lowest I could get was 144.7.
Wow.
So no, 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 no. It's
144.7. Which puts you right here on our board! Right between Simon Pegg and Nick Frost!
Hmm.
They shoot a joke where it's so high up on the board that he's got to get Hammond a step ladder to...
No, that's been done. They did that. They've done that. But I mean, Top Gear is a great show. Forza Motorsport 4 is the greatest freaking car game of all time.
Yeah,
it is. I reacquired Gran Turismo 5 this past week because I know the 2.05 patch was out, and they've made some significant changes to the gameplay and stuff like that. Like they've cleaned it up a lot. They've added a few new cars, including one that I was really desperate to take a look at in action, the new Toyota, and. I started playing and I was completely underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Again. Once again, I mean, from someone who played hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of hours of Gran Turismo between 2 and 4, Forza just destroys it utterly.
So if I was to own, like, because I'm not a car game person,
yeah.
But if I was to get into it, to, like, play a game, or to have a game in my collection to try out sometimes,
yep.
That would be the one to go with.
If you had an Xbox 360.
Oh.
But
what would I do on PS3?
On PS3, Gran Turismo 5.
Right.
On PS3, I'd have to say Gran Turismo 5.
Yeah.
However, no. Like, play Gran Turismo 5 and enjoy it, knowing full well that on Xbox 360, there's a little game called Forza 4 that utterly annihilates GT5 on every level.
Okay.
And it does. I mean, it's not to say that GT5 sucks, because it doesn't. It's an amazing car sim, but Forza 4 just...
is the perfect car sim.
Yeah, I mean, it's just for options, for playability, and as much as I'm low...
For a tear-jerking opening movie.
I don't think Forza really has an opening movie.
I thought it had the commercial for Forza. I thought that was
that was fantastic. I don't think that was actually in the game as an opening movie, though.
Oh.
It was a great commercial. It was a live-action commercial filmed in London.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a guy leaving, like, work in a carpool, and he gets out and goes to his own car, jumps in an Aston Martin V8, and basically tries to get out of London as quickly as possible.
Right.
And the whole time, Jeremy Clarkson from Top Gear is narrating over it, and he's talking about how the petrol head and the gear head are becoming... creatures of the past, and eventually they'll all be extinct.
Yeah, that it was an awesome great commercial.
I love that, you know, there is a place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, it was pretty cool. But yeah, it's...
What's the name of Buddy taking the dive off the bridge? He gets arrested.
He gets arrested. Okay. Yeah, he gets stopped.
Really?
He gets stopped on the bridge by all the cops.
Now, if they paid the extra coin, and the guy driving the car was Frank Martin...
No, that wouldn't have fit. It wouldn't have fit. It's not a transporter thing. You know?
Okay, maybe if they hired the hire from BMW.
or Drive, the driver, with his velvet scorpion jacket.
The problem with that, though, man, is you'd be creeped out whenever you turn on the Xbox, he'd just be staring at you.
The driver is watching you shave.
Cool, that was it, hey, for you?
I think so. I'm trying, was there anything else? I think that's about it. I played the hell out of Forza 4.
Yeah. We have to play some Age of Conan.
We really do.
Because that's something else I forgot that I actually started playing this week.
We do. Yeah. We should. Because that's an awesome game.
Just for fun.
Yeah, that's a fantastic
game. You still have my Age of Conan character?
Yeah. I still got all my characters.
Nice.
My Stygian Assassin.
I did get all the Camaros in the game.
Oh, yeah.
I made it my mission, and I acquired all the Camaros.
Nice.
And
does it have the IROC? The IROC?
Yeah, 1990, baby. 1990 IROC Z.
What color do you have?
I believe it's red with black.
Oh, red with black? Yeah. Blah! Blah, you're supposed to... No. Roxy wouldn't drive red in black car. Silver.
I think it's like black and white, actually. Like black and white striping. But, yeah, I've got my Camaros. I've got my... I've got a few Trans Ams. I got my Lamborghinis, you know. I did one race with the Viper that was actually mega intense. Like,
oh, yeah.
There was some two-wheel drift action.
Wow.
I actually sat down and watched the replay.
Did you?
Yeah, like, I sat down because it was so intense. Like, and that's the thing with Forza. Like, with Forza 2, Forza 3, not so much 3, but definitely the first two, with Forza 1 and 2. One was an Xbox game, 2 was 360. But if you messed up, if you got loose and went off the track and stuff like that, you might as well just restart the race.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no recovering. You know, especially Forza 2. Forza 2 was really, really bad for it. With 3 and 4, 3 it got a little bit more intense, but 4 it really kind of picked up that intensity. Like, you could recover, you could regain positions and stuff like that, so it wasn't like this exercise in frustration to race. You know, and you do get the rewind feature, which is kind of cheesy, but at the same time, you know, like... it really helps you learn the game.
Right.
And I mean, initially, yeah, every time I screw up a turn and lose positions, I used to rely on the rewind. I'd always hit rewind and just continue from there. But as you come to grips with the feel of your cars and stuff like that, you find you have to use it less and less.
Yeah.
So it's gotten to the point now where if I do use it at all, it might be once or twice a race.
Right.
You know? So it's pretty good. It's an amazing racing game. And it's so... if you don't want to get into all the customizing and upgrading and all that, it's just so accessible for someone to just pick up and play. Even the career mode, you know?
Yeah.
Like, You have one particular car that you like using, and it's not eligible for a race, or it's not competitive. The game will ask if you want to upgrade it to a competitive level, and like, it does it all automatically. It just charges to your bank account, throws the upgrades in, you know, and it's just such a fun, you know, simple pick up and play game, yeah. And yet the racing simulation is the best you're ever going to see.
Wow,
you know, awesome game, so great.
You got me sold on it, man. Yeah, actually, you do. Like, I'm actually thinking I want to play a racing game.
Hey.
Just after that.
It's also, it loathes me to admit this, but the Microsoft Wireless Racing Wheel, which I think they've discontinued now,
yeah,
is actually really freaking good.
Yeah.
Like, I've tried the high-end Logitech wheels on PC and stuff, like the G36 and all of these, like these fancy force feedback wheels and stuff, and I gotta say, I prefer the Microsoft wheel.
Really?
Yeah. Just the force feedback feels really good, and the wheel is not too loose, it's not too tight, you know, like it's just got a really nice feel to it, and it's easy to control. It's like, it's not too much drift, there's not too much play in it and stuff, so like when you're cutting around turns and stuff, it feels like the tactile feedback feels more like a real steering wheel.
Right.
You know? I mean, you'll never have the complete illusion of driving a vehicle with it. Yeah. That's impossible.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does feel as close as you're going to get with one of these racing wheels kind of thing, right?
Cool.
So, I mean, like, to real car nuts, I mean, I know this is not something you do tomorrow, but to a real car nut, like, if you want the ultimate driving experience on a console, get your hands on Forza 4 and the Microsoft Wireless Force Feedback Wheel.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Two thumbs up.
Oh, way up. Way up. Huge. I think that's it for me.
Nice. Johnny?
Well, I also had a bit of a light week. For me, it was pretty much two downloads and one rediscovery.
Ooh, I like rediscoveries.
Yeah, I took, upon hearing Steve gush about it a couple weeks ago, I got a PlayStation card and downloaded Journey.
Oh, I still need to do that.
It's gorgeous. Yes. Absolutely gorgeous.
Man, I'm doing that tomorrow. I'm picking up a car and getting that tomorrow.
You should.
It's shag it.
I gotta say, it's almost indescribable when you're just walking across the dunes and you see another person.
It's pretty cool. It's kind of...
No, I kind of like the fact you can't communicate.
It's It struck me as a little odd at first. And what I thought was really cool about it was, like, I saw someone off in the distance and I was like, that's the first sign of any living thing that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, crap, that's another player. And they're just going about their business. You know, they're just going about their thing. But then I realized they saw me too.
It's another player?
And they were coming over towards me. And
you can't
directly
communicate. You can't talk to one of them. You can't communicate. So, you guys, you can just ignore them and go on your way and beat the game by yourself. Or you can work together. Right?
Now, we didn't really work together, but, like, it was still kind of cool that, you know, like, I saw them and I was like, oh, you know, cool. And, like, it was so odd because you're in this barren wasteland and it's just signs of life. So you're like, wow. And that kind of immediately gets your attention. But then when they see you and react to you the same way, they kind of come over to say, like, hey, what's up? You know, that kind of thing, right? And it was just kind of like...
Incredible journey speak.
Yeah, incredible journey speak. It was kind of cool.
Neat. I didn't realize there was that kind of online element to it.
It was... I mean, it's nothing like it. I can't even really say it is, but it's the same essential, like, premise as Demon's Souls.
Right.
Like, the online for
Demon's
Souls.
Oh, I see what you mean, yep.
Yeah, you know, like, there is no direct interaction.
Only they're not coming to rape your dreams.
Well, no, that'll only be when you get invaded.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't do that in Journey. See, so, John likes Journey?
Yeah. I'm enjoying Journey.
Great.
And I also broke out the 360 again.
Woo!
And I said this last week. I didn't get a chance to play it at that point, though. Downloaded Cine Mora.
Oh, the shooter.
The shooter, which is... what's the best way to play this? Great 2D shooter. You know, I'm really enjoying it. Fucked up. Now, it didn't surprise me at all to see Grasshopper Manufacture.
Oh, at the beginning of they were involved, were they?
They were one of the co-developers. It was two development teams. It was they and a group from, I believe, Hungary.
So, see, Grasshopper Manufacturer, I immediately check out.
What else have they done?
Grasshopper Manufacturer?
No More Heroes.
No More Heroes.
Shadows
of the Damned.
That wasn't directly then, though.
Yes, it was.
That was EA, wasn't it? Wasn't that Mikami was involved? Shinji Mikami?
No, it was Grasshopper Manufacturer.
Yeah, but wasn't Mikami involved with that one?
He didn't direct it either. He's one of the producers. He and Suda 51.
Yeah.
Were the producers. Yeah. It was directed actually by an Italian guy.
Oh, okay.
That's the one with that gun that shoots bones, right?
Yeah. The boner.
The boner.
The hot boner.
That's actually what it's called.
No, Cine Mora is a... it's based completely around time. When the level starts, you've got a clock ticking down. Every hit you take shaves seconds off that clock.
Every
enemy you kill adds time to it. When time runs out, it's game over. Your plane explodes. When... So you'll find
yourself... Speed as a shmup?
What?
It's like speed as a shmup?
Yeah. Yeah, only it doesn't suck. There's no, take me to that interchange at the 105. I am a horrible actor. What do you do? I return it to the video store.
That's cool. So it's got a real arcade quality. Like a lot of, yeah. Games, there would be a time limit.
Yeah, and it's kind of refreshing after, because, I mean, shooters the past few years to me have... We've kind of lost that whole... The Gradius and Artoid methodical... You know, it's memorization, and... We got more into the bullet hell ones.
Yeah.
Manic bullets everywhere on screen. And while there are bullets everywhere in Senimura, you can't just weave paths through everything and avoid enemies in it. You find yourself, as you're looking at that clock, you've got to start taking enemies down. And the story in it plays out like a really, really dark take on Star Fox.
Ooh. Right? A gritty reboot. Are you an animal?
Yes. Well, you're playing several different characters, right? And nobody speaks English. It's all
Babadoo-baba.
No, it sounds like that, but they're speaking Hungarian or Russian or something.
Okay, so they're much meaner sounding.
Yeah. And they swear at each other.
Yo.
And the story is dark. Like, I mean, you're talking about the genocide, like... Yeah, apparently the first level in it is, you know, you hear the story about basically this group of planes that were ordered to drop something like an atomic bomb, right, on the city. It's talking about 60 million people died that day. One pilot refused to drop his bomb. His co-pilot blew his brains out. So his now
and these are animals.
Yes, his father, who was crippled earlier in the war. Basically, there's a big time travel mechanic in it. Goes back in time, back and forth in time, to seek out everyone who was involved in that mission and murder them.
Wow.
So one of the characters you're playing as is essentially a, you know, chrono serial killer.
So,
it is...
The moral of this story is Japanese people are weird.
Apparently the Russian people are really weird, too. But... Underneath all that, it's just this great arcade shoot 'em up that plays a lot like stuff like R-Type or Gradius.
Cool.
You know, the power-up system's different. You know, you pick up your power-ups, and every time you get hit, not only do you lose seconds off the clock, you lose one of your power-ups will bounce off, right? And you've only got a couple seconds to reach out and grab it again.
Yeah, I've seen that mechanic used a few times.
Yeah. And the bosses are enormous. Like, that's what I like, you know, big multi-stage, huge war machines.
Right on.
Right? It's got a really cool art style. And, you know, if you're looking for a decent shooter on Xbox Live, gets thumbs up from me.
Nice, nice. I think I have nightmares.
Dabba-doo-baba.
You do that too well. Like, you've been studying it.
To me, that's what Star Fox always was. You know, people always laugh at the dual barrel roll, but that's not funny to me. To me, the funny blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, true.
See, the whole thing about me with Star Fox is I could finish the Super Nintendo version in about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And I could finish the N64 version in about 12 minutes.
Wow.
So, you know, I played a lot of Star Fox.
Well, Star Fox is a good game.
Star Fox was a great game, man.
Star Fox 64 is the only great game on that system. And yes, I just said that. Nintendo fanboys, eat me.
I'm not going to start that debate, Steve, because I just want to say
it's the only great game on that system.
There were two other really good games.
There were good games, but it's the only great
game. One of those two games was great.
Fucking princess, shut up.
Okay, I'll
Screaming Queen.
I'll give you a great Nintendo during the news.
You can bash Nintendo during the news.
I'll give him Ocarina of Time.
All right, okay.
But that's all you get.
All right, all right.
Don't say Mario 64 was a great game. It wasn't.
I never played it.
It was not a great game. You need at least 72 coins to pass.
So, I haven't posted the pictures up on Blast Processing yet. I recently built a new shelf in my basement to put my game collection
on. Looks great, man.
It does look good.
Yeah. And because my games are no longer in a cardboard box, I can actually see what I own.
Which is always nice.
And it's really nice. And I had a game there I played for about 2 days when my wife gave it to me for my birthday last year. I decided to break it out and start playing it again. That was Alex Madness Returns for PS3.
Cool.
And you want to know something? That's a great fucking game.
It was a pretty cool game, yeah. I just recently traded it in, but I do plan on acquiring it again.
I'm really, really digging
it. I took advantage of the fact that it was good for the two for whatever deal at the local Evil
Empire.
You
should if you were looking for stuff to get rid of, yeah.
And considering I didn't have any income at that point in time, which I do now. Yay! Congrats! But anyway.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Which is great.
So,
So I used it to pay off my copy of The Witcher 2.
Nice. Dylan,
you son of a witch. Anyway, continue. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I got Doug and Alice, and, you know, good fucking game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved the first one.
I really enjoyed the first one back in the day.
Yeah.
Again, you want to talk about a game like, you know what I'm saying, with Cinemora, twisted as all shit.
Yeah.
It was pretty messed up.
Yeah, like, I dread to see the inside of American McGee's head.
Hmm.
What was it he was doing next?
What was he doing next? A whole lot of opium.
No, there was another like fairy tale-ish game was announced fairly recently that he was doing, but I think it was for PC only.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what happened?
Might have been Red Riding Hood.
That sounds familiar.
But it was. Yes, it was Red Riding Hood, and he was doing it as a feudal Japan like samurai thing.
Okay,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it looked really cool.
When did he? He kind of disappeared for a while before Madness Returns, right?
He had Scrapland for Xbox, yeah.
And did he do that one Bad Day LA, which was like
Yes, he did.
Huge bomb.
Yeah, because that was originally supposed to be like a big AAA release, and it got scaled back to like a downloadable title or something.
Yeah, and apparently sucked the big one.
Yeah.
But Alice Madness Returns doesn't do that. I can say, there was something, it was almost really refreshing, but I was a little bit disappointed at first when I had to chuckle. You know, the first chapter of the game, I must have been sitting down playing it for about 4 hours, right? And just doing the Mad Hatter's section of Wonderland. You know, it was this crazy industrial hellhole, looked like something out of Charles Dickens. You know, and you got, like, the entire wall. It's basically like the Dormouse and the March Hare led a workers' uprising.
Right.
So they're all carrying like signs with backwards arrows and stuff on them.
No,
it's like Soviet looking picket signs.
But
we're
not playing anymore.
Oh, sorry. I'm just stuck in that Soviet mindset now.
No, I was playing that for about 4 hours. You get to the end of it, and I was like, walk in, and it's like, all right, here we go. I just walk into the boss arena, and then there's a cutscene. There was no big boss. I was like, oh. But then I started realizing, no, you know, despite there being really cool combat in the game, there's it's not focused around that.
Yeah.
It's more of an exploration thing.
Yeah.
Puzzles and jumping and
that kind of lot of jumping. A lot of jumping. She's got me the biggest jump I've ever seen in the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, she can triple jump and float like Princess Peach.
Weird.
And then pull out a butcher knife and stab the shit out of something.
That's the Vorpal Blade, isn't it?
The Vorpal
Blade. Yeah, the Vorpal Blade.
I love, man, when you pick up weapons in the game, you get, like, this old poster blows up on the screen. Looks like an ad for the circus back in the 1800s. When the Vorpal Blade comes up, the first thing print on the bottom is it goes snickersnack.
Nice.
Cool. One of the weapons I have in it so far, I got her long-range weapon is a pepper grinder.
Yeah.
And then I've got a hobby horse. Is there a big heavy weapon?
Right.
Like a big two-handed warhammer that whinnies when you hit things.
Does she have cards again in this version?
I don't have them yet.
There was a ranged weapon in the other one.
She threw them like ninja stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's got the pepper grinder.
Okay.
The ranged weapon. And I got an umbrella for deflecting things.
Nice.
Cool. And it's really cool. The combat's slower than, you know, we've been accustomed to after God of War and Ninja Gaiden.
Well, no, the whole thing was the original Alice Combat was kind of like, it was very much stuck in that late 90s PC mindset.
Well, this,
you know?
This doesn't feel stuck in that mindset. This one just feels like it's more
a platformer.
Yeah, you know, it's more methodical. And when you get into a fight, it's like, it's about switching between your weapons effectively.
Yeah.
And using them. Because, I mean, you're taking on 10 and 12 guys at a time, so it's all about crowd control and
sounds like Space Marine.
Yeah, like
Space Marine!
Actually, the game's almost as bloody as Space Marine.
Yeah.
And that's all I've been playing the week. You know, it's kind of, I'm kind of saving up because we've got The Witcher coming next week.
Oh, I can't wait. Tuesday. This Tuesday.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't wait. Oh, nice. I'm so pumped. Yeah, like, I have the PC version sitting on my shelf.
Yeah.
Yet I cannot wait for this.
Plus, you can't wait to stick that, put that racist elf back in this place. What does he call you, round ear?
Yeah, something like that. I can't wait to go back to that world, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it was, what the reviews came out today for it. Reviews started circulation. They're all, 99% of the reviews have been 8.5 or 9. There hasn't been anything lower than an 8.5 that I've seen.
Right.
And one of the reviews, I believe it was Eurogamer, that said basically, you know, when you think about RPGs and you think about all these moments that make RPGs so memorable, like FF7, you remember Aeris with her hands clasped together after being stabbed by Sephiroth. You don't remember the barrage of random battles you had to face while you were rushing to try to save her.
Yeah.
In Skyrim, you remember slaying a dragon on top of the mountaintop. You don't remember having to wind your way up a zigzag path to get there to do it. You know, like, that kind of thing. But The Witcher 2, every moment of the game, like, everything is memorable.
Yeah.
Everything is more, like, it's designed, like, you don't just remember the big events, you remember the events leading up to the big events. You know, like, everything about the game is a more memorable experience.
Something I love about it, this is probably coming from an art design perspective, so many games, we were talking about this before with Thane from Mass Effect, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So many games waste so much breath and so much time on trying to make you buy a character as a badass.
Yeah, like, outside, to make endearing for to certain people, you know? Mm-hmm.
Outside of Conan the Barbarian, Geralt is probably the baddest motherfucker I've ever seen in a fantasy title, and it's done so effortlessly.
He is a genuinely, I mean, like,
he's believable.
He does have that enigmatic man of mystery shtick going on, like, he does have that amnesia thing.
Yeah.
But it's not played upon.
It's not emblazoned on his chest.
Yeah, and it's not like, you know, oh, my lack of memory is a crutch, and, you know, like, it's addressed, it's spoken of.
No, his crutch is the poon he's burying himself.
But the whole thing about the character is, you know, like, he's one of these guys, like, I persevere in spite of, you know, like,
he's Solomon Kane as a video game character.
Yeah, you know, I don't remember my past, I don't remember where I came from, I don't remember what happened to me. But that I know that I've got a job to do, and I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And the amazing thing about it, and the first game even, which came out in 2003, I think, or 2007? 2007. The original version. And The Witcher 2 is exactly the same in this regard. Like, you've got, you know, Mass Effect, and you've got Dragon Age and stuff, and they're playing with these choice and consequence things, you know? I think it was Fable really went, you know, for every choice a consequence, kind of, was almost like their mantra. And The Witcher and The Witcher 2 just make these efforts look so laughably amateur by comparison. You know, like, even the first game, which is 2007, 5 years ago, you know, like, every choice you make, like, there are no easy good and evil choices. It's all these shades of gray, and they have long-lasting and all-reaching effects on the gameplay. You know, it changes entire acts of the game. You know, Witcher 2, based on decisions you make in certain key moments, you might go to a completely different location when you start Act 2. You know, it's
or you might go to a town and somebody who was, you know, a hero in the game is going to become a hated villain.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like, it's so amazing how they put it all together and how they juggle it, how they keep all those balls in the air without it becoming, you know, a mess. Like, I could never see him being able to do it with Mass Effect.
All the new gamers out there who have really started coming into RPGs, thanks to stuff like Skyrim and Kingdoms of Amalur, right? Give The Witcher 2 an honest try, and I will guarantee you, you're going to be looking at that and looking at CD Projekt Red and saying, where the fuck did these guys come from?
Yeah, and I mean, I've been saying it since the first Witcher came out. I've been saying, like, these guys are the future. You know, these guys are going to be the next BioWare.
And this game sells what it deserves to.
Yeah.
So, don't pirate it. Don't you dare pirate it.
You can think about it, but don't you do it.
But was no, it, wasn't the guy, the lead on The Witcher 2 said that we're never doing DRM again. Because that just, they just pirated it out of spite then.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly, right? You can't stop it. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you can build yourself up as a company, like, I mean, I look at in the PC world, you've got Blizzard and you've got Valve.
Yeah.
You know? Not even BioWare are really held in the same regard. Like, Blizzard, I
honestly can't think of, you know, any instance where their games were heavily pirated.
Yeah.
You know, or yeah. Valve, same type of thing. You know, 99%, I'd say, of people who played Half-Life 2 went out and bought Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, it's one of those things that, like, they've got the respect for some reason or another, which is bizarre, because there are other games out there that are just so much better.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And CD Projekt Red try to do right by their fan base. You know, they really try to kind of, they're trying to accommodate PC gamers, and they're trying to accommodate players. And the thanks they get is they sell 1 million copies, and they have 4 million copies pirated.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just not fair. Yeah.
So what was a surprise hit should have been an, oh my god, smash hit.
Monumental hit. Yeah, yeah. You know, and like, you look at that, and truth be told, the argument is right there. You know, it's right there in front of you. Yes, I'm sorry, PC gaming is dead.
Yeah.
You know, if they could have sold 5 million copies of that game, and they sold just under a million.
There's a reason that The Witcher 2 is being pushed on consoles.
Is being pushed through.
They're dipping their toes in the water now.
Yeah.
Because if this plays out well, I guarantee you when the time comes that they announce The Witcher 3, you're going to see that and say, coming to Xbox 360.
Yeah, 360, yeah. PlayStation 3, and PC.
Yeah.
I wonder about the numbers of people who pirated. I wonder if there's any percentage of them that downloaded it on a whim, tried it once, never touched it again. Like, what I mean is people who pirated it and are in that number of pirates,
people
right?
People who pirate 20 games a week and just...
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. But people who would never have bought it in the first place.
Exactly. There's a lot
right.
of that. There is
yeah,
a lot
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
You know it.
Yeah.
It's like the music and movie scene.
Yeah.
You know, it's the age-old argument. People who pirate movies are never going to pay money to watch them anyway.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Shall we move on to the news, gentlemen?
We before we get onto a topic that's... Before we go to a dark place.
This week in the news. Release dates. Square Enix's Sleeping Dogs, formerly True Crime Hong Kong.
Which looks badass.
Looks fan-freaking-tastic.
What is that? Like a GTA thing?
Yeah. yeah. Set in Hong... You're playing an
no,
undercover...
No, I love how they took...
Under, like, who's going into the Hong Kong triads.
Yeah.
And they
deep cover.
So you're playing
cover.
Jackie Chan.
Yeah. Well, he's
no,
like
dude,
Jet
you're
Li.
No, fucking fuck. Now I say this as a guy who has. Is my bag of Jackie Chan still here?
Yeah, it's here somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking to a guy who loves his Hong Kong action movies. Fuck Jackie Chan. This is the you're like Jet Li in Donnie Yen territory.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And there was a gameplay video came out of PAX. It was a full mission. And it starts, you know, in the traditional Chinese restaurant or Hong Kong restaurant. You know, the guys are all sitting around sipping tea.
Which, you know, right. The kitchen's going to have steam vents blasting everywhere.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, go find so-and-so and punish him. He refused to pay protection money to us this week, and he said he was in with some other gang now. So, you know, you want an example made of him? Yes, you know, you get up from the table and he walks away. And it ends up going through the kitchen, the back kitchen's out into the alleyway looking for this guy, and then it turns into, like, a high-speed foot chase.
Right.
It looked awesome.
Cool.
Like, it looked so energetic, so action-packed, like, so fast-paced. The fighting, like, the hand-to-hand combat looked really fluid and really cool to look at. Like, the moves and stuff were really contact-sensitive. Like, he was bashing people off their surroundings. Like, at one point, he's on a roof, and there's, like, one of these old-school, you know, air exchanger fans on the side of the air conditioning fan or whatever.
Yep.
He takes Buddy and slams his face into the fan.
You know what it looked like to me? And I'm not going to say... I can't really... I don't want to take anything away from Rocksteady.
Yep.
Because everybody knows those last two Batman games were awesome.
The combat does look like Arkham City.
It looks
City,
like
Arkham
they took
Asylum.
Arkham City
yeah.
and Square said, well, now, guys, you're going to see what somebody who's wearing grown-up pants can do with that idea.
Yeah. Right? And it does look really awesome. And they released a trailer, too, the same day, which showed some of the car action, some of the driving action. And there's, like, full-time, like, real-time, you know, you can pop out one of the windows of the car and shoot while you're driving, and it all just looked so cool in action. Like, I mean, the controls look pretty seamless. It doesn't look like it'll be a nightmare to control.
I just
know?
Love that whole, like, hard-boiled style story, you know, how deep is too deep.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Cool but music and everything?
Yeah, it does look really, really good, man, and I'm already sold.
And that when is that coming out?
That's coming out on August 14th of this year.
Nice.
Yep.
And that's something else I'm really liking now, guys. Developers showing stuff off and not making us wait 2 years for it.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a trend I can, like, you know, like the Assassin's Creed 3 thing.
Yeah.
And, like, the Medal of Honor Warfighter thing.
Didn't,
you know, it's...
Also speaking in new release date news, didn't Wasn't there a new release date for Resident Evil 6?
Resident Evil 6 was pushed up from November 20th to October 2nd.
Wow.
That's a pretty big jump, man.
Yeah.
That's, you know, over a month.
And over
that,
a month, yeah.
That trailer left me salivating.
The Resident Evil 6 trailer.
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, man. Fantastic.
And once you find the bald mercenary everyone was wondering about in that first trailer, you find out who he is.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
Yeah.
That was so awesome.
All right, don't spoil it for me. Don't spoil it for me.
So, release date, Sleeping Dogs, August 14th. And this one, Larry, is just for you. Sony's borderline classic Japanese RPG for PlayStation 1, Legend of Dragoon, hits the PlayStation Network on May 1st.
Bit of a cult following there on that one.
It does have a cult following, and you know what? It was a pretty damn good game. Mm-hmm. They were going after, you know, Sony put the money behind it, and they had a talented development team, and they went after Final Fantasy. That was specifically their mission. They put their money where their mouth was. It had a higher budget than Final Fantasy 7 or 8 did.
Wow.
And they went after Final Fantasy with this game, and they damn near succeeded. I mean, the mechanics were rock solid.
It was a greatest hits title. It definitely sold.
Oh, it sold really well, but the big complaints came from the storyline.
Right.
And, yeah, the storyline wasn't, you know, it didn't quite elevate to the Square levels of storyline. It was more traditional JRPG.
Yeah.
With some go-go Power Rangers comics.
Yeah. But it was a pretty cool game, and it's cool to see it come back on PSN. Sadly, they were working on a sequel for PS3, apparently, but it got canned. So, I know Larry was certainly disappointed when he heard about
that. Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
In new release, new announcement news, there's only one, but, and for most people it probably won't mean shit, but for me it was a doozy. It talk about blindsided. Lost Planet 3.
Well,
it's coming.
And any listeners out there who want to know why that's a big deal, go on YouTube and look up the trailer for the first Lost Planet.
Blood runs cold.
And now it's not going to look the best nowadays because, I mean, you're looking at something that came out in 2006 or 2005?
2006.
Early 2006.
2006? Yeah.
And you're looking at a trailer that...
If you, man. I played Lost Planet, the original Lost Planet.
Oh, it still looks
just a few
good
months ago,
game.
And it still looks great.
Yeah.
It still looks great. That engine, the Lost Planet engine, is what has been powering every single Capcom game in this generation.
Yeah, I believe we brought that up when I brought Asura's Wrath over.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
God damn, it's still good looking.
Still a great-looking game engine, man. I mean, Street Fighter 4, Tekken X Street Fighter.
What I always loved about Lost Planet, though, man, was just the main character's got the most unassuming hero name ever. Wayne.
Oh, no.
No, but, dude, it's Wayne who rides around in mech suits and fights giant snow bugs.
Yeah, ice bugs.
Ice bugs.
And then, but now, like, okay, Lost Planet 2 was a bit of a, for me, was a bit of an overlooked gem. I loved Lost Planet 2. I thought it was a fantastic game. From a design sense.
Kill big.
Yeah, and I mean, like, from a design standpoint, what they did with the different factions and the world was phenomenal.
It was ambitious. Right? It was
really ambitious. Yeah. It was hamstrung a little bit by its online focus, and that's fine. I mean, I could play it single player. I had no problem playing it single player. But a lot of people kind of did, and a lot of people didn't like the fact that the online hooks were too obvious and stuff like that. You know, whatever. People had their reasons for not liking the game. I thought it was incredible. I'll say it's definitely, not even probably, but definitely in my top five new franchises of this generation.
Yeah, really?
I love it. I love the series.
When I heard that 3 was coming, right?
I was very excited. It's a prequel to the first one. It takes place early on in the settling of EDN 3, the planet that everything takes place on. And
so it's a frozen shithole.
Yeah. And the part that does have me worried, the part that I am a little concerned about until I read the first hands-on gameplay, was that it's not being developed by Capcom internally. It's being done by a company called Spark Unlimited. Anyone who's not familiar with Spark Unlimited, they did Call of Duty Finest Hour for PS2, Xbox, the original Call of Duty console game, which was okay, it was decent. Mm-hmm. This generation, they were responsible for Turning Point, Fall of Liberty, and Legendary.
Oh, no.
Which were both pretty horrible first-person shooters. Pretty wretched. But apparently the producer of the Lost Planet series at Capcom is directly overseeing Lost Planet 3. He's involved.
Well, that's good.
He's heavily involved, and instead of working on the MT Framework engine, which they did for the first two, they're going Unreal 3 with this one.
Okay.
And it does look pretty awesome. Like, the graphics look good, and the early gameplay, like the hands-on that I saw in Eurogamer, I think it was, they said basically it still looks like it plays like Lost Planet. which is great, which, you know, has me satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to it. That was the big
mech suits and one of those bugs punches through the ice. You're like, God damn it, I need a bigger cunt.
Yeah. So that was the only new announcement this week.
Okay.
Nintendo.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Has registered Super Mario Bros. 4 as a web domain. Fanboys have lost their fucking mind. Steve's wife has lost her fucking mind.
She has.
She's telling me that if this comes out and and this doesn't happen and her heart is broken, she'll be coming for my balls for posting the news. When I was looking at it, I got to start wondering, especially like after I just recently finished the Mario Brothers 3D on the 3DS.
Ugh.
When is enough enough, Mario? You're Italian. You know, when are you going to turn up the heat a little bit? You know, I'm talking like, you know, maybe adding a third Mario brother, you know, put Nico Toscani in there or something. You know, the Koopa kids aren't going to be kidnapping the princess anymore, you know, once one of them's got his arm bent around backwards and his neck snapped.
I'm excited about the possibility.
Instead of a fire flower, you can get a pool cue, broken pool cue. I mean, one of the threats going to start coming out. You know, hey, Bowser, I want to give you a Sicilian necktie. It's when I slit your throat from ear to ear, pull out of your tongue, and watch you squirm. Hey, Bowser, you kidnapped my girlfriend again. I'm going to take a shit in your mouth.
Oh.
I'm going to dip my balls in marinara sauce and give you a taste of home.
Oh, my God.
Me and Luigi want you to meet a third brother, Gino Fellino. We told him, Bowser, you killed Bobby Lupo.
Oh, God.
Okay.
But you want to know something? Okay, all joking aside.
More Super Mario World, less Mario 2, Mario 3, and I'd be satisfied.
Give me...
I know all you fanboys think Mario 3 is the greatest game since whatever, but you know what? Mario World was a better game. Suck it.
And here's, you know, I kind of like to go in the direction, get away from the picking up stars, get away from the three hidden coins in every level. Just give us a level to be conquered and put a couple secret exits in there, right? Mario almost felt more adventurous and more ambitious that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, when you were finding those the secret keys and the keyholes in Mario World, you felt like you were you had found this big, huge
and
secret.
Mario World was goddamn immense.
It was
huge.
The problem is, Nintendo will not just do that. They're going to screw with it.
Yeah,
because they miss with everything that they do. That's a reinvention. They try to reinvent.
I'm going to say something else that's going to make me extremely unpopular. But you know what? I've never been afraid of the truth. It's Miyamoto's fault.
Yeah,
the man is too ambitious for his own good. Mm. He's the Peter Molyneux of the Japanese.
Well, look at the stuff he had to say this week. Yeah, this week he went out and he said, "Now I'll agree with him one thing: the 3D images isn't enough." It's really not, right? No. It's not enough to justify all the trumpeting you guys did for that system.
Yeah.
But then when he goes out and he says something like Skyward Sword, you know, making those controls work was not enough. Yes, it was, Shiggy, because it took 6 fucking years for a development team
to finally deliver
on the promise.
Yeah,
to finally, you know, Skyward Sword is what we should have had with Twilight Princess.
Exactly. And I don't understand. I mean, yes, I love a lot of the games this guy was directly involved in. Link to the Past, one of the greatest games I've ever played.
Didn't he recently say he's interested in revisiting that?
Yeah, that's another news item.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that later.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that he, like, in the years since, like, ever since, really, the N64 or the GameCube, Nintendo has never been able to live up to what they created in the 8-bit and 16-bit eras.
Yeah.
They've never been able to.
No.
And the only people who think they have are Nintendo loyalists.
Are living in that 8-bit and 16-bit
era. Man, Wind Waker was wicked. Fuck you guys. I'm out of here.
Shit, son, you just got wolfed.
Yeah, Wind Waker was awesome, except for the fact that you couldn't change the camera controls, which made it unwieldy as hell.
And it was only half the size of Ocarina.
Oh, well, it was still pretty big, guys. Come on. Hey, we're going to move on.
And sailing was really, really boring.
Oh, no, it was deadly, dude. And,
yeah, sitting there doing nothing for minutes.
Yeah, but if... anyway.
No, you know what was fantastic? The sandwich I made while I was waiting.
All right, we're going to move
on. Mustard with heat, baby. Kevin.
Yeah, all right. Okay. We're going to, because we all disagree. I disagree on this.
I don't hate Wind Waker. I don't hate any Zelda game.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah.
But last time I played Wind Waker, I found it virtually unplayable.
Okay.
It's just there's so much that even for the time that game was released was considered like a standard. And it wasn't there. It wasn't in there. You know, you couldn't pan a camera up and down. The camera was just locked to you on a horizontal plane, and even then it was inverted. You know, it was just like, let me go in and change it. Let me go in and change my inversion. You know, let me go in and flip the camera. Why must you do this to me?
Yeah.
And we're not talking about, you know, a PlayStation 1 era third-person platformer made by, you know, Incog Entertainment or something. We're talking about a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
You know? You shouldn't have to be fighting with controls with a Nintendo first-party title.
Especially something
on the GameCube.
Yeah. That being said, camera didn't bother me at all.
No?
When was the last time
you played it?
It was a joy from start to finish. 2004, maybe. 5.
Yeah, see, that was over 5 years ago.
Well, anyway, let's move on. Okay, Demon's Souls. This is sad news.
I cried.
Yeah. Demon's Souls U.S. servers will be going dark before May 31st. World tendency will be shifted a few times between now and then.
Apparently based on how players are in the game world, like on events that they're doing. But for those who don't understand world tendency, if you go world tendency white, which is done by like kicking boss ass as a human without being undead kind of thing and all that stuff. The game gets easier, and certain passages and stuff unlock. You can get additional stuff based on world tendency. The more you die as a human, and the more like invaders kill you and stuff like that, it shifts more and more to black.
Right.
Black makes the game really, really freaking hard. Opens different passageways and stuff, and also allows access to different items and stuff like that. Okay. So
the reward for failure is failing more.
Kind of like that. But again, like it does open different pathways and stuff like that.
Will this affect anything in the game that you can't get at playing single player?
No, not necessarily, because with single player you can adjust world tendency even in the single player, even in the offline mode.
Oh, okay.
But what it is when you're playing single player, it's just at neutral when you start.
Right.
And you have to basically go through the process of lowering or raising world tendency based on your actions. Like I think three or four, you kill three or four bosses and it'll change. But the values for different action stuff are really arbitrary. This is something that's kind of been like in FAQs and on the Demon's Souls wiki and stuff. People have been kind of hitting around and theorizing and stuff about how world tendency works exactly ever since the game came out.
Yeah.
And no one really has it mastered.
Yeah, right.
So it's pretty awesome in that regard, but it's also cool, like,
I know... The director's sitting there going...
those guys are evil, man. They're evil.
On his mountain of skulls in a castle of pain.
With a chalice of blood.
Yeah, next to a river of blood.
Now is the season of evil.
So that's a bit sad, because, I mean, I was going to start digging into that this summer.
You'll still enjoy it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still, I mean, it is still playable, but the online component was... I can't say it was an essential part of the game, because that'd be a lie. Right. It would. It's not essential.
You were going to die at that boss anyway.
Yeah, it's really not essential.
Yeah.
And I didn't make much use of it when I was playing through.
Yeah.
But
it's nice.
It was just that extra dimension, and it was so unique. It was so different, you know? And it's kind of sad. I mean,
always sad to see a server go dark, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of it.
Especially something so cool as Demon's Souls, man. Something so just amazingly original and awesome like, as that game. And there's still a lot of people playing.
Because even looking back at something like, you know, the time we put into Halo and Halo 2.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you're telling someone about it and telling them how, like a younger gamer, how awesome it was. You can't show them anymore.
They can't experience that. But I mean, it's the march of time.
Yeah, I know.
Imagine the day that WoW goes dark. Sometime in the far-flung future.
Yeah, sometime in 2084.
Celebrate the love.
Man, are still playing EverQuest.
Yeah.
You know, okay, EverQuest Online Adventures is gone, but I think there might have been 10 people logged into that.
You know? Those people we call losers.
But EverQuest is, like, the original, not even EverQuest
right,
2.
Right.
But EverQuest is still a lively gaming community, you know, so it's a long way off.
Hmm.
I don't know how many people they'd need a month, but I mean, when you're looking at millions of subscribers.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be too worried.
Yeah.
But it'd still be a pretty crazy day.
It would be, man.
Yeah. In Kickstarter news,
Kickstarter. Yep. Kickstarter is going to die.
Unsolved Mysteries update.
The bottom is going to fall out of Kickstarter. I give it less than 5 years.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay.
Everybody's going to jump on it, all over it, and it's going to be useless.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I totally agree.
Let's enjoy while it lasts.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
For now,
and the ship can get out of it, man.
Shadowrun Returns.
Yes.
Has hit over $950,000.
Nice.
Of its targeted $400,000 goal. With 2 weeks remaining, it looks like we're easily going to hit the million mark.
Yep.
Tell us, Vanna, what we get when we hit a million.
When we hit a million, we'll be getting a second hub world, a second fully detailed city, as decided by the backers. So it could be Chicago, New York, Tangier. It's pretty cool. I'm super pumped!
That's
I
great,
can't
man.
Wait
it's
to
great.
Play this game!
And wait, actually, guys, before we even started recording, three of us were actually arguing over what it'd be. That's how big nerds we are. Arguing over, you know, Steve was saying how cool Tangier would be.
Yeah.
Which one did you say, Kev? Would be awesome?
Well, I'd love to see Bug City. Same as you, man.
Yeah.
And I was saying how cool Free California would be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the raiders California and the smugglers state. Out on the... Basically Desolation Alley, the video game.
So, it looks like we'll be getting our second hub world, and we'll also be getting Linux and Mac ports. And I believe the Linux and Mac ports will be available to anyone who donated $15 or more.
Nice.
So, that's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool. We were looking at the donation tiers earlier. I know, like, the different levels and stuff. And, man, some of those packages are so sweet.
I think we talked about those...
The big one I know we talked about last week.
Yeah.
Oh, I watched the video after.
Yeah? The videos are hilarious.
I can't describe how awesome it was when they had the guy who...
Who did the first version of 2007
sitting there holding the sign and says sorry, and then they start pelting him with paper.
Yeah. Apparently he's actually working for Wiseman now.
Yeah.
He's working for Smith & Tinker, which is pretty awesome. But, I mean, the whole thing with that, too, I mean, it's shitty, but, you know, I was willing to give it a shot. I was still willing to try. And it's just Microsoft had the license and felt they needed to do something with it.
Yeah, the same when they should have zagged.
Yeah. Mm. But that's it. It just shows how out of touch game development houses can be sometimes.
Yeah.
You've got this great, rich RPG world. Let's make Counter-Strike!
Let's make a Counter-Strike club. But it was quick and easy, see?
Yeah.
That was their way of seeing if there was still a market for Shadowrun. If the fans were loyal enough to support it. And, I mean, if they had been, maybe we would have gotten our Shadowrun RPG. Maybe
the gliding mechanics is pretty cool. I remember that.
Dude, I really enjoyed my time with that game. I did. I gotta say, I can't lie. Yeah. I had a lot of fun with Shadowrun. Just the magic, the teleports and stuff like that. You know, like, it worked. What they did worked. And that's all there is to it.
I just honestly felt like they could have done so much more with it.
Well, bar none. But it's just...
Even if you were just making a Counter-Strike clone, there is so much more that could have been done.
I think Microsoft was kind of looking at it as a reboot.
Yeah.
They were kind of looking at it as a restart of the franchise. You know, like, this was, they owned the name, they owned the property, but they didn't own all the old intellectual material. You know, like, they didn't own all the facet books. So it was kind of a situation where, you know, what do we do with it? Do we go back and mine the old stuff that we don't really own, or do we just start with a clean slate?
Yeah.
And I think what they were thinking was clean slate.
Yeah.
You know?
But that's in Wiseman's hands, and he's like, I own it all, bitches.
Yeah, well, he licensed it all. Which is great. But, I mean, I'm just happy we're getting Shadowrun
back. I had
to
pay for my old creation.
I can't wait. I really can't wait. I love the SNES games so much.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Speaking of other properties that would make entertaining movies, EA are looking for production partners for Need for Speed, the movie.
Woo!
Screenplay is done. Written by Real Steel writers George and John Gatins? Is that it pronounced?
Gatins or something? I don't know.
Now, for anyone out there groans, I'd just like to tell everyone, Real Steel was a much better movie than it had any right to be.
Real Steel was a lot of fun, and you know what? It had a lot of heart.
It had a lot of heart. It was over the
top
with robots.
For a movie about punching robots?
It was Rocky with robots.
Yeah. Well, Rocky over the top.
It was way better than over the top.
Turn your baseball hat around. Time to turn the switch.
But over the top, Dad! Over the top!
Winner takes it all. Loser takes the fall.
Oh, but the Real Steel video game, boy, did that blow.
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, man, do not download that demo, folks. Don't do it.
It's a trap.
As for Need for Speed, several studios seem interested, But Paramount is the current frontrunner.
Warner Brothers are up there, too, is apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they should just do fucking cross-promote it with the next Fast and Furious movie. That last one only made, what?
$6 gajillion.
Yeah.
That was one of the big movies of last year, I think, wasn't it? Fast Five? Yeah. Didn't Fast Five?
That was paying for all the roids they had to pump into Dwayne Johnson to get him that.
Yeah, that did really well. I remember hearing that.
That was a good flick, too, man.
I've never seen any of those movies.
You don't have to see any of them to enjoy Fast Five. That was just a great good throwback action movie.
Yeah, okay, it wasn't a car flick at all, which is great, right?
But when there were cars, oh, baby, they crashed into things.
So, getting back to games based on pen and paper games.
Hey.
The guys behind this year's Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition, which we're all really looking forward to, have expressed their desire to tackle Icewind Dale. If the Baldur's Gate remake is a success, and of course it will be.
We all know it will be. Maybe not a Shadowrun Returns level success.
Well, it will be, though. Can Planescape Torment be far behind?
I'd say, with that statement, fanboy heads just went...
click, click, boom!
Oh, it'll be successful. And I mean, as an iOS game as well,
yeah.
You've got such an opportunity there, right?
Pardon my ignorance. I played Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2 and love the shit out of the two of them.
Okay.
I've never actually played Icewind Dale.
I haven't either.
It's Baldur's Gate, only considerably more combat heavy.
Okay.
It's Baldur's Gate as a dungeon crawl.
Okay.
It's
like Dark Alliance?
No. It plays like the original Baldur's Gate. It's the more point and click, almost like real time strategy as combat, but as a dungeon crawler. There's a lot more loot gathering. There's a lot more just fighting and stuff in it.
Right.
There's not as much world exploration.
Okay.
As there is in Baldur's Gate. Like Baldur's Gate was kind of.
Did you kill all the drows?
You do kill some drows. And some driders, the spider human drow.
Oh, those are awesome.
Yeah, there's a few of those in there. And the one thing about Icewind Dale, a little bit of Icewind Dale trivia, Icewind Dale heralded the arrival of Jeremy Sewell, who went on to become one of the most heralded video game composers.
Really?
Of our time. Yeah, wow. He was responsible for Morrowind, Oblivion, Skyrim.
Oh, no way.
SOCOM. He's done a lot of video game orchestrated soundtracks. Icewind Dale was the first. And Icewind Dale's soundtrack to this day remains a thing of sheer awesomeness. Really, really great soundtrack. It was, it had that sweeping fantasy majesty of something like Baldur's Gate, which had hints of Braveheart and stuff like that in there, combined with Conan, with that more, that harsh.
I'm writing it down because I really want to hear some of that music.
It's awesome stuff. But that was I recall when Icewind Dale came out, that was the first thing that really jumped out at everybody was, man, that soundtrack is awesome.
Yeah.
I actually still own Icewind Dale and Icewind Dale 2. Cool. And they're both. Every now and again I revisit them. They're great games. I'd still love to see Planescape Torment again.
Yeah.
That was a pretty fun little wacky game as well.
Great. Well, that's something to look forward to. An awful, awful, awful lot. Mm-hmm. And that's supposed to be this summer, right?
Baldur's Gate is this summer, yeah. So I assume that Icewind Dale would probably be next summer.
Yeah.
That's my hunch.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever. Speaking of awesome RPGs, Kinect support for Skyrim is coming the week of April 23rd.
You've rendered Dovahkiin speechless.
Dovahkiin just needs to shout at his Kinect now. Pusroda!
Like an idiot.
Yeah.
I can't get on board with it, Steve. I know. I just can't.
I groaned loudly the first time I heard about it. I was like, why would you do this?
Well, it was on that demo reel, right?
Yes, it
of,
was. Yeah,
of
yeah,
all
yeah,
the extra stuff. Yeah. And I was thinking, oh, that part's a joke.
Yeah. No,
it wasn't. It wasn't.
What was really cool about it, and believe it or not, in my brief time spent with Mass Effect 3, I did make use of this feature.
Right.
I won't lie. I did. The voice command feature really appeals to me. And if it works as well as it did in Mass Effect 3,
yeah,
I'm totally on board with it.
Okay.
Totally on board. The ability to bring up your map and say, where am I? And have the icon automatically move to your location on the map. And then say, Whiterun, travel to. And then, That stuff is really freaking cool. Mm-hmm. Instead of having to go through menus, instead of having to equip, you know, like, win and equip stuff, just, you know, shout out, equip sword and shield, and have whatever sword and shield you have hotkeyed in your favorites automatically appear on your character. You know, like, that stuff's pretty cool. Being able to voice command your allies, like, ally trade, and yeah. being able to, like, organize equipment by weight, trade all, and being able to give, you know, like that's pretty handy.
Yeah.
That's pretty handy, and it worked really well with Mass Effect 3.
Organize equipment by weight. No, don't sell it! God damn it!
But see, now we can easily make fun of that because of our experiences playing with the dashboard. However, I had pretty much 100% success rate with Mass Effect 3.
I said sword, not sandwich!
Equip sandwich.
Ah.
Now I'm dead. All right.
Xbox. Bing. Elder Cheese Wheel.
But no, with Mass Effect 3, you know, it uses it for stuff like reload, and, you know, you could switch weapons with it, like, just say machine gun, sniper rifle, whatever, right. and he'd switch weapons accordingly and stuff. And it worked really well.
Okay.
It did. It did work extremely well. And, you know, you could fuck around during the dialogue scenes and, you know, speak in your best Commander Shepard voice.
Yeah.
For a little decision wheel and stuff. And it picked, like, 100% of the time it picked it up without any errors. So, you know, like, that's pretty cool. Now, using it for dragon shouts?
I'd feel pretty dorky.
Yeah, I'm
that,
a little
man.
More I'm a little more leery on that one. And, you know, there's no motion control, so there's no standing in front of your Kinect making sword and shield motions or anything like this. That stuff's not in there. But it's pretty cool. I gotta say, the video that they showed of all the different features you can do with it, and there's over 230 voice commands have been added. So, I'm interested. I'm definitely interested. And on top of that, it's free.
Oh, is it really?
It's a free upgrade.
Oh, okay. Well, that's...
You know?
Why not, hey?
What's also kind of interesting about this is they've said there's going to be future free upgrades for the Xbox 360 version.
Hmm.
So I'm thinking, like, a lot of the stuff that showed up in this demo reel.
Yeah.
Like, this stuff they showed at the Jam Week or whatever.
Yeah.
I get a feeling you're going to see a lot of this stuff on the Xbox exclusively.
Oh, I hope not.
Which is kind of a drag.
Why would they do that?
It is. I want to suplex people.
I think the big thing behind it is... I think it's just it's a bit harder to get it all into the PS3 version.
Right.
Because they're porting from a PC environment. I think there's just more work involved.
Move support.
You know, I think there's just more work involved in getting it onto PS3.
Yeah,
and that's why they're saying there's going to be free updates and stuff. It's not going to be, but on the plus side of that, you may see, you know, when the DLC packs start coming out, when the expansions start coming up, you may see the updates bundled in with those.
Yeah,
which would be nice.
Yeah,
which would be a good gesture, because I hate to see PS3 gamers left out in the cold, even though, like, graphically speaking, the PS3 version looks like shit on a sandwich compared to the 360 version. And it hurts me to say that. It hurts me to say that. Because I love my PlayStation 3.
Right, right.
But for Skyrim, the only system to play it on is the 360.
Oh, man. See, I never really played it. I saw you play a bit on the 360. But I still was in awe playing it on the PS3.
It's a fantastic game, and PS3 gamers are not missing anything. Yeah. You know, like, however, if you have both machines...
Yeah.
You need to play it on 360.
Yeah.
You know, if you have a 360 sitting next to your PS3, which I am fortunate enough to have, and you have the 360 version, that's the version you want to play.
Yeah.
You know?
What if you have a PS1 sitting next to your PS3?
Then you want to play it on PS1. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And you want to load up some ROMs.
It was called Warriors of Might and Magic, and it sucked.
So, Crysis 3... is being formally announced on April 16th. Box art features Crysis Guy carrying some kind of funky bow.
Yeah, it looks pretty weird.
There was a Crysis 2?
Crysis 2 was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Crysis
2
was one of the best shooters of last year. Man.
I never even played Crysis 1. What am I talking
about? Crysis 1 was great, too. They were awesome games. I'm actually kind of excited. I'm looking forward to it. They always said it was going to be a trilogy, right from when the first one came out. They kind of said it. So this is, hopefully this is like the end of it.
Well, they're going to have to, man. I mean... How many franchises can they come out with and fit Cry in the title?
This is true.
Hmm.
The next one's going to be called Cry River.
So, last but not least...
certainly not least.
Certainly not least. Getting back to Miyamoto.
Fantastic.
Something that we almost talked about earlier.
Wow.
He has stated an interest in revisiting... the beloved classic, A Link to the Past, probably as a 3DS remake.
God damn you, Nintendo! So,
why do they fucking keep putting all this stuff that I want to play on the portable systems?
Because they're so desperate to sell that lump of shit, is why.
Ah, it pisses me off to no end.
Why couldn't we have a nice Wii version, or Wii U version?
Yeah.
Not that I'm buying a Wii U.
You're gonna have a Wii U, dude.
No.
You have two daughters, dude. You're gonna have a Wii U.
Doesn't matter.
No, okay, listen. If there was, like, a reimagined Link to the Past coming, he just might.
I might. Yes. Yeah. You know what? That's true. But you know what I will not buy for a reimagined Link to the Past?
What?
A 3DS.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nintendo.
If Jeff Winger couldn't make him buy a 3DS?
Jeff Winger could not sell me a 3DS.
Yeah.
Nope.
He tried.
He did.
He got
tried really hard.
Sarcastic and...
Yeah. He punched an intern in the nads. But it wasn't enough. I'm sorry, Mr. Winger, but I will never, ever own one of those pieces of shit.
Mm.
Hell, I'm hard-pressed to buy a Vita.
Yeah.
I'll never buy a 3DS.
I find it interesting that... Well, I mean, he's only saying now he'd be interested in revisiting it. So, I mean, that doesn't say anything, really.
He did say that it'd be dependent on finding a director who is capable of doing it, because
right.
he's working on his own project right now for the Wii U, apparently. Probably another Wii Music. Yay! Isn't that the last game Miyamoto was directly
Shiggy
involved
Flip.
In? Yeah.
What are you, Shiggy Flip Wii Music?
Yeah, really. Again, prime example of Nintendo, you know? It's a visual analogy, I'm sorry, but here is your finger on the pulse of the community. Here is Nintendo's finger, far away from the pulse and directly up their ass.
Oh, dear.
It's just, they've grown so accustomed to their fan base just lapping at the dog dish.
Yeah.
Like the loyal little hounds that they are.
I really thought you were going to say teat.
No. I wasn't going to go that route, because that's the road more traveled.
That's crazy.
I have taken the road less traveled, and that has made all the difference, okay?
That's our Robert Frost quote of the week.
So, you know what? I'm going to call it right now.
Yeah.
I'm calling Shigeru Miyamoto our asshat of the week.
Really?
Yep.
But he didn't do anything asshat-ish.
He announced a Link to the Past remake for the 3D fucking S.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess that's kind of asshat. That's asshat-ish to us.
That's definitely. He's definitely. My asshat of the week.
Okay.
Better than my choice for asshat of the week.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Who was yours?
I can't say, because he might be listening.
Okay, moving on. Right. So that's the news.
That is the news.
Yeah. Now, we were thinking about doing something a little different this week, weren't we?
We were. Do we have an object in question?
Well, what were we calling it?
Fire the retro rockets.
Firing the retro rockets. So the idea is we talk about a retro game instead of doing our regular blast ambush topic.
As seems only fitting, considering the previous topic of discussion.
Yep.
I submit Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
Okay.
We're all intimately familiar with A Link to the Past.
Oh, God, yes.
I'm sure we all have fond memories of A Link to the Past.
Yeah, I played it on my PSP.
I can still remember, guys, first time I ever saw that simple little rain effect at the beginning, and my mind blown right the fuck out to Pluto.
Yeah. How about trying to chase down that guy and that when you go into the village for the first time, there's that guy who like runs really fast and
you
gotta catch him.
Yeah, and you had to kind of mash the run button. And hope for the best.
Yeah, yeah.
You had to generally guide yourself in roughly the right direction.
Yeah.
No, see, you couldn't. Once he started running, you couldn't change direction. The key was to let go of the dash button, and, you know, quickly try to turn and hit it again.
It was just A Link to the Past was one of those games. My first memory of A Link to the Past was, you know, it was released around the same time as Contra 3. They both came out the same day. And it was one of those situations where it was myself and Brad Chafe. Shout out to Brad. I know you don't listen, but hey, shout out. You the man. We both went out to buy a game. And, of course, we both wanted to buy Contra 3.
Right.
And for some reason or another, Brad talked me into buying Legend of Zelda instead of Contra 3. And I thought, well, I'll get Contra 3 in a few weeks or whatever when I get paid again or whatever. Whatever reasoning. And so he bought Contra 3. I bought Link to the Past.
Mm-hmm.
We got home. We both went down to my place. We cracked open both games. We played a few levels of Contra 3. We popped in Link to the Past. We didn't turn on anything else for the entire freaking weekend.
Yeah.
It was just Link to the Past for the rest of the weekend. And I remember even Russ being completely enthralled by that game.
Yeah.
Shout out to Mr. Russell. He loved that freaking game.
Yeah.
I remember going to the cabin, and this was around the time when, like, we used to get my parents to drop us off, and they'd go, and we'd stay up there for a few days, like, or a week, or whatever, in the middle of the summer. And I remember going up with the generator and the Super Nintendo, and this was, like, the game had been out a little while, but it wasn't super old. And I remember we played through it up there.
Yeah.
Over that week, we sat down and played through Link of the Past using our like my little 18-inch color television and the 650-watt generator outside the We just sat down and played in the middle of the late summer, had a few beer, and played Legend of Zelda Link of the Past for a week. You know? It was awesome. It was absolutely fantastic. But it was one of those games that, like, for me, what blew me away with it was you had a pretty simple map. You know, you bring up the map and you look at it, and it wasn't an overly complex map. It was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, that's true.
But they crammed so much stuff into
it. Man.
They had stuff hidden everywhere. Yeah.
And they doubled the size of it by having the Dark World, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, on top of that.
Speaking of the Dark World, it's not really the first. You end up in there for a split second during one of the dungeons.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the first time you actually go in there and the map opens up,
yeah.
Man, to this day, when I bought that special edition of Skyward Sword and it came with the orchestral soundtrack, right? At one point during one of the medleys, the orchestra actually hits the Dark World theme from Link to the Past. I still get a chill up my spine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, you need that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right? Awesome. It was kind of like a more adventurous version of the Hyrule theme.
Yeah.
You know? But it was just, man, it was such a cool, and it was the Super Nintendo firing on all cylinders.
Oh, yeah.
You know, definitely. Like, it had the music, it had the sound, it had the graphics, it ran so freaking well, like, the controls were so precise, and it was just such an all-encompassing trip.
You get to the end of the dungeon, you walk into that boss chamber, instead of having, like, the big static dragon sprite or whatever, you get in there, and you know, it's not much to look at nowadays, but you get in there, you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
I'm in for it.
And every boss was unique. Every boss had, I mean, now that's something that still holds true to Zelda to this day. That's one of the things that they haven't messed
with. Well, it was Link to the Past was the first time they really did it.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember, you know, and you had to, whatever you got in that dungeon, you had to use, like, using a hammer to smash the Helmosaur's mask.
Yeah,
to get his weak point.
Yeah.
And having the one, I think it was Treenix, you had to, they had the fire and ice head. You had to use the different rods. You got into two different dungeons too.
Yeah,
And then there was a boss you had to use the hookshot on, right, to get all the cloudy bits away from him. Yeah, that's right.
And there was another, God, what was his name? Invitrius, I think. It was the big eyeball and the big pile of goop.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You had all the little eyeballs. You yanked them out with the hookshot.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
And slash at them. And then you had this big center eyeball that'd be looking around, and you got caught in its sights and just blasted a huge column of lightning at you.
Yeah. And I remember one where you had to use, like, it was coming up and out of the holes in the floor or something like that, and you had to use the hammer to...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it was just so freaking cool.
And the, man, the first time you fought, is it Aghanim, the wizard?
Aghanim, yeah, yeah.
Having to reflect his own shots back at him.
With
the
Master Sword,
yeah.
You know, and even, like, the level when you go into the Hyrule Forest for the first time with the three talismans to get the Master Sword and stuff, it was classy. It was all
clouded and fogged in, and then when he pulls the Master Sword, I mean, that was the first time a game just, my jaw dropped.
Yeah.
How epic that was. You know, he pulls the sword out, all the light shoots out everywhere, it clears the fog, and you start seeing the god rays shining down.
Yeah.
And another really, really great moment always sticks out in my mind is that guy in the clearing, the flute guy.
Yeah, yep.
That was sad, man.
That was so sad, but really, like, it's something that always stuck up in my mind about that game, right? It's something I remember.
And, I mean, it was, you know, before that you really only had, well, it was only Zelda and Zelda 2, wasn't it?
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this game, they really kind of, it was the first time with that series that they really kind of tried to build a mythology with it. Like, you know, they told a story. And they did such a great job of it.
Yeah.
Just such a beautiful, like that opening little, it wasn't even an opening for the game, it was the rolling demo, I believe, where they gave you kind of the background about the Golden Land. And,
that's right.
The three goddesses of Hyrule.
Yeah, yeah. Ganondorf corrupted the Golden Land and it was sealed and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, like, and you start playing the game and, you know, everybody knew of Ganon because of Captain N and because of the old games and stuff, but everybody's like, where's Ganon? You know, and like, Ganon was the villain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you get to the Dark World and stuff and you start to hear talk about Ganon and he slowly gets brought into it, you know, and it was just like really, really cool how they put it all together, you know. It was a real, you know, it was for a long time, I'd say until Twilight Princess, personally. I know a lot of people like Ocarina of Time, but for me, until Twilight Princess, that was really Nintendo's masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Well, it really, I mean, really, the characters in it were...
Dark story, too.
It was, man. It was.
It was, in Zelda 1, there were no villages, there were no nothing. It was just, you know, occasionally you meet an old man or old woman.
Yeah, Zelda 1 was, like, once removed from Atari.
Yeah. You know? And then Zelda 2, yes, you had a bunch of different villages, but the characters in them were not interesting.
No,
a
lot of them. Error.
Yeah, they just said the same kind of stuff and da 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 da. And then when you come to Link to the Past, you've got characters that have their own stories.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and it just made it come so much to life.
It was really, really,
yeah,
just a majestic little game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, and it's something I still can enjoy.
Yeah,
you know,
because I broke it out on the emulator last week.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
still pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's great. Like I said, I played it on PSP.
It's pretty awesome. It's still goddamn awesome.
Yeah. It's well worth people out there who are a bit younger, didn't grow up with these games, didn't get a chance to play it. Man, friggin' play Link to the Past.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a few ways to get it. You know, you can, if you want to track down a Super Nintendo and a copy of it, it's not ridiculously rare and more ridiculously expensive. I'm sure you can get a copy on eBay for less than 30 or 40 bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can. But there are other ways. I mean, you can get it on Game Boy Advance. I wouldn't want to play it on Game Boy Advance personally because, you know, the Game Boy Advance is a piece of crap. But...
Oh, yeah, that's right. You could play it on... the
Four Swords.
Yep.
But it had its own release as well. It had, like, just a Link to the Past.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the Game Boy Advance, the screen was just so tiny, and it wasn't...
The screen was tiny, but it also it fucked with the resolution of the game.
Oh, okay.
You, stuff that was, like, stuff that would have been all on one screen on the Super Nintendo, you had to move around. You really see it in some of the boss rooms and that.
Oh, okay. Yeah? It was zoomed in a little or something.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, see?
And then they added the voice whenever you take a slash from a sword, that just...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's right, I forgot about that.
And it's only that one thing. It's not like, you know, nowadays with Skyward Sword or Twilight Princess, it's not so bad because he makes different ones for the different...
Different strengths and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's, if you can find the Super Nintendo version, or, well, of course, there's the Wii Virtual Console.
Yeah.
Right.
It's available on the Wii Store as well.
Yeah, if you want to go the legal route.
Yeah.
And if not, hell, get yourself an emulator.
Yeah. Soft mod on Xbox.
Move up to Canada.
A land of freedom.
Soft mod your Xbox and grab a crap load of ROMs.
Yep. Or your PS1 if you got one of those flying around.
You can't soft mod your PS1.
Oh, yeah.
You better wait in the car, though.
Bring it to your shady buddy.
Steve, I kind of took over this week.
That's okay.
I'm going to let you do the sign off.
Really?
Oh, actually, wait a second, guys. Before you sign off, I got one thing to say.
Yeah?
Captivate was this week? Or was last
week?
It was. Guys, the DMC redesign of Dante kicks ass. Suck it!
I concur, John. I agree
completely. I also concur on that.
I think that new trailer looked awesome.
Listen, all I got to say is waking up naked, surrounded with cigarette butts and empty energy drink cans.
Yeah,
and then getting dressed in midair while fighting a gigantic demon that throws a fucking Ferris wheel at you. And you're saying that's not capturing the spirit of Devil May Cry?
Hey, Bob. You're still all butthurt because he doesn't have white hair.
Hey, Bob, put a spin on this. What you got there, guys, was pure punk rock badass.
Yeah.
And the Resident Evil 6 trailer. Holy crap.
We're making Kevin watch that after this.
Yeah, yeah, that was just...
And wow. I got to see the Lost Planet 3. And I got to tell you something, guys, because I was always a Capcom fan. I kind of rag on them a little bit because they definitely lost their luster. The past few years, they've really turned Captivate into their own little event.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
They, like, last year they showed, I remember that's when we first saw Dragon's Dogma. We were like, holy crap!
Which is right around the corner and looks amazing.
Yeah. It does,
really good.
Yeah. And, you know, they're really becoming known for just some great surprises.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, Lost Planet 3 for me was like, whoa! You know, it's just, of all the games that I never thought would see a sequel after Lost Planet 2, you know, like that and Kane and Lynch, I never thought I'd ever see again.
I gotta say, after seeing that gameplay trailer for DMC, I had no doubt in my head. I knew when everyone was saying, emo Dante, and I really had no doubt, because I've played Heavenly Sword, I played Enslaved, and I know that you weren't getting half-assed from Ninja Theory.
No, Ninja Theory.
You know, maybe there's some people out there aren't the biggest fans of Ninja Theory's brand of combat, but this looks changed from Heavenly Sword or Enslaved.
It looks more like Devil May Cry.
It looks intrinsically like Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
But, storyline-wise, you're not going to get half-assed from Ninja Theory.
And besides this, like, I got to say it, I went back a few weeks ago and played through the first three games.
Yeah.
Like, never played
through.
They're
not masterpieces.
I fired them up. Basically, the whole reason I did it was to see if I wanted to purchase the HD collection.
Yeah.
And I decided after playing about an hour of each
that
I have no interest whatsoever in a HD collection. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just like, you know what? These games are relics.
Yeah. And that's just, man, I went back to DMC3. And, you know, I still remember having that conversation with Jeff about the, whenever Dante had opened his mouth in a cutscene, we were saying pizza time, dudes. Right? But, yeah, he's a caricature.
Jeff's whole thing with Devil May Cry 3, man, was just... His thing with that, it was a knee-jerk response in his rabid, like, venomously rabid defense of Devil May Cry 2, because he was the only person on planet Earth who enjoyed Devil May Cry 2.
No, he's the only person on planet, he's the only person on planet Earth that couldn't accept what a kick to the pills Devil May Cry 2 was.
No, he genuinely loved that game.
But it's just,
he loved Chaos Theory.
The darkest glyph thou bearest. Thy name be Chaos Theory.
He loved Devil May Cry 2.
And he loved Crimson Tears.
He probably enjoyed Crimson Tears, but he didn't love it. But I know he was huge on Devil May Cry 2. Huge on it. And I just like...
Dude, these are giant, giant, empty baseball field-sized corridors.
Yeah.
No enemies.
Oh. Now, Dante, I gotta say, graphically, like technically speaking,
it
was the nicest looking of the three. Devil May Cry 2 was.
Yeah.
Like, Dante's character model was the best it ever was in the series and stuff like that, right?
Just, you know, the nonsensical female character.
Anyway, yeah, Devil May Cry looks awesome. Resident Evil 6, I'm mega sold.
Yeah.
And Lost Planet 3.
Wompopaloobop, good goddamn.
Yeah, definitely. There you have it. That's our show for this week. Kev is too tired. He's spent. He spent all of his time doing the intro, so he can't handle the outro.
I stole it from you.
You stole my show!
So I'm giving it back.
You're giving it back. I'm taking it back.
Yeah, you take it all back.
You stole my lighter.
Megaforce. Swish. So, yep, there you have it. That was Blast Processing. You can find us on Facebook, under www.facebook.com/blastprocessing. You can find us on DVDverdict.com under the forums. We've got our own little section there. You can get us on iTunes if you subscribe to DVD Verdict Presents.
We still tweeting?
We are tweeting.
Have you been tweeting?
We should be tweeting.
Yeah. All of our Facebook posts are actually linked to our Twitter.
Oh, great.
So everything we put on Facebook goes on Twitter.
That's perfect.
So, you know, Twitter, I think, is B-Processing on Twitter.
Okay.
I did recently open up a WordPress page as well.
Really?
So you may find us in the very near future at www.wordpress.com/blastprocessingonline.
That's fantastic.
In the meantime, stay frosty. Keep your eyes out for demons and guys who throw Ferris wheels.
Keep your boner close.
Keep your hot boner locked, loaded, ready to rock.
Practice getting dressed in midair.
Yeah, practice getting dressed in midair. And
I wonder if Garcia Hotspur could do that, get dressed in midair. Probably could.
Yeah. Man. It's badass. He's got a motorcycle.
and a gun that shoots boners. And a hot boner.
That shoots boners. Oh, this is going to weird places.
Well, if there's anything we want to leave you with this week, it is this.
We're gone.